This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Now, in the meantime, China's central bank has made moves to shore up the yuan with a stronger-than-expected fixing and a planned bond sale in Hong Kong. The People's Bank of China set its reference rate at 6.8930 per dollar on Tuesday. That's 0.2% higher than traders and analysts' average forecast of 6.9089.
Now, I think that 0.2%, many people would think it's quite small, but actually, it's quite big for a country like China. And this is very symbolic because this comes as a defense tactic for that trade negotiation. The yuan started to weaken in early May as the trade war escalated and the economy slowed. But the exchange rate actually slid to its weakest this Monday. And this sparked a debate on whether China will allow it to break a key 7 level for the first time in the financial crisis.
But the fixing does send a message that authorities want to keep the yuan stable and have no desire to see it weaken further. So for more on this, we speak to Kun Goh, head of Asia Research, ANZ Bank Singapore. Thank you for joining us, Kun. So what do you think, what is your opinion on what this signals?
I think that Chinese authorities are sending a clear message to the market that they want to keep the yuan stable. I think importantly, the market had been betting that the psychological 7 level might break, which is what the markets have been trying to position for. And I think yesterday's fixing was a clear signal to douse any market expectations for, you know, further depreciation in the yuan.
And in this, is this indicative of a stronger capital outflow from China than expected?
Actually, the capital flow picture out of China has been quite balanced. We haven't really seen massive evidence of capital flight like what happened in 2015 and 2016 period. To a large extent, that's because the Chinese authorities have put in place quite a lot of administrative controls back then in order to curb outflows, which are still in place, which is why the flow picture is a lot more balanced this time.
Does this signal to the U.S. that China is more amenable to trade talks, especially with the G20 meeting coming up?
Look, in terms of how they manage the currency, I think that might well be part and parcel of the trade negotiations. But there are also other reasons why the Chinese authorities want to maintain stability in the yuan. While a weaker yuan will definitely help exporters and help to offset the impact of the increased tariffs, there are also costs involved in a weaker yuan. A lot of Chinese corporates do hold foreign-denominated debt, and a weaker yuan would put those corporates' balance sheets under stress. Also, further weakening in the yuan could well trigger renewed capital outflow pressures if indeed the Chinese residents think that the prospect of further depreciation is a real risk, and that might destabilize the Chinese financial system. And finally, the Chinese authorities have a long goal of renminbi internationalization. They have just opened up their capital markets. The equity and bond markets have been included in global benchmark indices. So a weaker yuan could actually put those at risk.
So, Kun, how does this fall in line with the PBOC's comments over the weekend when they said that they have a lot of policy options in order to deal with the trade war between the U.S. and China?
Yeah, indeed, they do have a lot of policy options. And since the 8/11 reforms in 2015, we have seen them employ various measures and tools to curb depreciation pressure. So they, apart from setting the fixings at stronger levels using their so-called counter-cyclical factor measures, they have also been recently utilizing the sale of yuan bills in Hong Kong, which is designed to curb liquidity and push up short-term interest rates, making it expensive to short the yuan. They've employed it for the first time end of last year and have now done it 3 times. They, of course, also can intervene in the FX market if they so wish to. They did that very clearly in between September to November last year. So they have various measures up their sleeve in order to keep the yuan stable.
Thank you so much, Kun. And that was Kun Goh, head of research at ANZ in Singapore. Now, Donald Trump and Xi Jinping may be meeting at the G20 summit in Osaka at the end of this month. And if they do, traders will be very closely watching at the gathering to gauge the outlook for the trade negotiations as well as the yuan. Now, aside from that, Citi is launching a co-branded credit card with Grab in their efforts to push for more customers. According to senior Citi executives, this partnership with digital firms is expected to boost its Asian customer base by about 13%. And for the U.S. bank, it is in line with its strategies to offer its products within online ecosystems as consumers spend more time on smartphones.
Yes, and this push will begin with Philippines today and Thailand later this year, where the cards will be issued. However, there is no mention as to whether Malaysia as well as other Southeast Asian markets will be part of this service.
Citi currently has 6 million customers in Asia. They expect an increase of 2 million in the next few years as a result of partnerships alone. And Citi also began partnering with other digital companies and launched a co-branded card with Indian payment firms Paytm last month, and with Qantas 2 years ago.
Now, what does this mean for Grab as well? Now, Grab has been pushing innovation into the financial services sector, and this is on top of their other services, such as their primary service, the taxi hailing app, as well as food and parcel delivery. And the competition in the financial service platform, though, is also quite aggressive in Malaysia. Now, Grab has competitors like Boost, Touch and Go, as well as BigPay, to name a few. But it is important to note that none of these services are interoperable, which means they are standalone and exclusive only to its customers.
Yeah, I'm not sure whether it will become interoperable, because if you have a very valuable ecosystem as Grab does, the question is whether you want to share that with other payments providers. And that space is so crowded. There's so many providers over there. I think there are over a dozen. And the question is how each of them are going to survive. Right? Grab right now gives a lot of goodies, a lot of freebies, you know, 20 times points. And they are establishing a footprint here, a very big footprint here, land grabbing, you know, grabbing market share. And then the question of profitability comes into question, right?
Yeah, and there's also limitations at the end of the day with this financial service platform, because not every shop, not every business will accept this. Unlike a credit card, which is probably universal and you can also use it to travel. From a Citi perspective, I can imagine, it just means that you have a huge amount of data mining that you can do on these Grab customers and then subsequently cross-sell many of your other Citibank products.
But at least here in Malaysia, there also seems to be a shift in consumer trends regarding payment methods. So here, 67% of consumers have used some form of cashless payment. Credit card is ranked as the third most used method at 27%. Debit card comes in second at 63% and online banking at 57%. Now, we'll be back with more interesting stories for you in just a little while. So be sure to keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.